Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Barry Habib. Barry is an American entrepreneur and frequent media resource for his mortgage and housing insight. Barry has had a long tenure with monthly appearances for CNBC and Fox. Barry is the CEO of MBS Highway, a company and platform created to help interpret and forecast activity in the mortgage rate and bond markets. Barry has had many successful businesses that he has founded, grown, and sold. This includes Mortgage Market Guide, Healthcare Imaging Solutions, and Certified Mortgage Associates. Barry's mortgage sales career includes being recognized for having the highest annual origination production in the United States on two occasions. Barry personally originated over $2 billion in mortgage loan production over his career. Barry, we welcome you to our show.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
I'm just curious, what year did you start in the mortgage business?
Here's the interesting thing, and I can't believe I'm going to say this. You know, next month will be my 30th anniversary in the mortgage business. So May of 1986.
Okay.
It's been 30 quick years.
So what's interesting about why I asked that question is whenever you originate your career, it sort of gets colored by what's going on right there. So I got introduced in 1980 and interest rates were nuts. By 86, they were still double digit, but they had come off of, you know, the craziness of 17% mortgage rates and that type of thing. So in your lifetime, since you started way back then, did you ever think you'd see a mortgage rate that would start with a 3?
You know, it's an amazing time. And because you have the benefit of that perspective, and I certainly have the benefit of that perspective, even when I wasn't in the business, I had a company that, and I bridged to get into the mortgage business, that what I did was, even at a young age, purchased real estate properties, sold them, flipped them, fixed them up. So it was very sensitive to the interest rate environment. So you and I have that perspective, and a lot of people listening to your show do. But it's so funny because you may speak with someone and there might be a minor fluctuation in interest rates, and a mortgage professional can say to somebody, well, the rate's 3 7/8 or 4%. And without the benefit of perspective, the customer might say, oh my gosh, that's high.
That's right.
It's not. It's rather amazing, and this is an extraordinarily terrific opportunity for financing. Not a great time, unfortunately, if you're a saver. But if you are borrowing, this is the time to be a borrower.
Tell me what MBS Highway does for the industry.
So what we do is for real estate professionals and mortgage professionals, we help them understand what's going on in both the real estate and interest rate markets, what's going to drive interest rates, which way they're heading and why, how to explain that to their customers, how to correctly articulate the opportunity, and then a real deep dive on understanding the opportunity in real estate. Now, I've been a regular on CNBC now and Fox for over 20 years and a professional speaker for 25 years and speaking about these exact topics. And we have been blessed with an incredibly accurate track record of forecasting many of the bottoms and tops in the markets. But we were the first ones in the end of 2011 to say the real estate market was turning and moving up, and people thought we were crazy. But as you know, for the past 4 years, we have seen a really nice move higher in real estate. And quite frankly, we think that trend will continue for a lot of reasons that are factual, even though the media is now trying to sound the alarm that there's another housing bubble brewing. There isn't. There's a great opportunity in real estate. And interest rates will remain very low for a while.
And hopefully we'll get to talk about that in the next segment. If you had to take the mood of the industry in general, the mortgage industry, how do people feel about being a participant?
Fed up with regulation and blessed with opportunity of a low interest rate environment and strong housing market. So it's a double-edged sword. Very, very happy and fortunate that this is a great time because refinances are plentiful and purchases are strong and the housing market's strong, but it is far more difficult and challenging to do a good job and get your transaction through because of the overregulation that currently exists. So that's the challenge and the opportunity all in one.
Demand for mortgages versus last year at this time?
It's stronger. Purchase market is up year over year on applications by about 20 to 25%, fluctuates from, you know, when you make the comparison on a weekly or monthly basis, but that's approximately where it is. And interest rates are slightly lower than where they were. So the refinance market is about 10% stronger than it was a year ago. So overall, by and large, if you're comparing just averages, you should see an improvement in your business over last year by about 15 to 20%.
Affordability. How does that's a topic that's, you know, foremost in a lot of people's minds, and especially the people that talk about the end is near and all that. What's your take on affordability and where we are?
Well, let's go deep on that, because this is so misunderstood, especially by the media, who gets this completely wrong because they have no clue and don't understand it. So when you take a look, first of all, at the United States as a whole, the affordability index, as measured as the United States average right now, is at a level of 175. Now, on a relative basis, the worst that that level was at, if you want to take a really bad time in the housing market, the peak of the housing bubble, 2006, 2007, that index was 100. So we are far superior to that. And if you wanted, as a gauge, say, what was the best time for the overall United States to see affordability? The index reached a peak of 208 in 2012, which is, by the way, coincidentally, exactly when we had forecast the market was about to turn. So we are still near the all-time best levels of affordability if you take a look at the United States as a whole, and very far from where we had difficulties in the mortgage business. But now when you take a look deeper and you look at individual areas, because as you're well aware, real estate is very much a local business that needs to be viewed locally, we are seeing, and we manage that internally with proprietary data. We have data from every market in the United States. So we measure the job market, affordability, meaning what percentage of households can afford a home with 5% down. Those numbers are typically right now outstanding for much of the country. Very, very strong, a far cry from where they were in 2006, 2007, and in some cases better than they even were in 2012 on affordability. Here's a problem that we see. A lot of the statistics that come out are completely misinterpreted by the media. They are horrible at this. And look, I want to call out somebody like on CNBC, who, you know, I know a lot of the folks there from doing business with them and being honest. And guess, but someone like Dana Olick, who just has been so wrong about the housing market, she almost has a vendetta because she's been really on the wrong side of it for so long. She feels, I think, married to it now. You know, a good tact to take for anyone trying to forecast things is if when you're wrong, you're wrong. You switch when the facts change. Just like John Maynard Keynes said, you know, when the facts change, I change. You know, whether you do. But some folks don't know how to do that. And she's called the market so incorrectly for so long that everything that comes out, she puts this negative slant on. And then people hear this and they take it as gospel. For example, let me give you a few things. Home ownership rate, very low right now. A little above 63%. Lowest it's been since 1994. And then you have to go back all the way to the 1960s to get a rate even lower than that. It can go back quite some time. That's not a bad thing if you're a home buyer. That's a very good thing. When the home ownership rate reached its peak of almost 70% in 2005 area, that was a bad time to be a buyer of homes because you have very few renters to purchase purchase homes. You have all the renters are kind of already homeowners. Here you have a very large crop of renters that can fuel and continue the health and growth of the housing market. In fact, because the home ownership rate is so low and so many people are renting, it puts a lot of pressure on the rental market. And we are seeing, according to the Consumer Price Index report, rents are going up at about 4% a year. And while that might not sound like a lot, the compounding effect of this over time is very serious. And here's the other thing that I always hear is when it comes to affordability. They say, well, you know what? Incomes have not kept up with home price appreciation, and therefore that's a bubble time. That's so silly and so foolish and shows sheer inexperience. Because guess what? Incomes have never kept up with home price appreciation, nor will they ever. And more importantly, they don't have to. And the reason that they don't have to, and what the media does not get, and what amateurs in this area who talk about it but don't understand it don't get, is that there is a relationship between income and payment. What I mean by that, and let's use an illustration. Let's just say a year ago, someone was going to purchase a home and the monthly payment would have been $1,000 a month. But they heard so much negative press in the media that they decided to wait till this year. Now home prices have gotten up 5% more, and now they decided to jump in. Okay. So if their home payment were going to be $1,000 a month, their income, you know, this is for principal and interest, would typically, and these numbers are substantiated by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac through all their averages, it's typically a 5-to-1 ratio. In other words, the payment represents about 20%, payment of principal and interest, not taxes and insurance, represents about 20% of their monthly income. So that means if they were going to have a $1,000 a month payment, their monthly income was about $5,000 a month. So now if that payment were to change this year, they didn't buy last year, they could have gotten for $1,000 a month. And assuming that interest rates stayed relatively stable, which they did, that payment, because the home price went up $5,000, would have gone up, I'm sorry, the home price went up by 5%. That monthly payment would have gone up 5%. So instead of $1,000 a month, a 5% increase means they'd be having to pay this year $1,050.
You know what I...
So that means let me just finish this book.
Okay.
If their income would have to go up, their income doesn't have to go up 5% to match that. Their income only needs to go up 1%. $5,000 a month, $5,050, to match that $50 a month incremental difference, incomes only need to go up 1% to match a 5% increase in payment for a home. Because of that, and incomes going up by 2.5% on average, you could actually see 10, 12, 13% appreciation. And so long as interest rates stay the same, it is still just as affordable for that individual to buy the home. Now, you don't want to push the envelope and go too hot, but 5%, 6% appreciation, very, very affordable.
I think what you're hitting on is sort of an important subject, and if you extrapolate that out, we've talked about 1 year, house went up and so much, but take that out for 15 years, and you put somebody in a rental home and put somebody that they own the property. There's a very different financial outcome for those two people. And
I'll give you some numbers, okay, because that's what we do. So let's just take a $300,000 home with a 10% down, and if you take the averages, you would not believe it, but after 9 years, and the reason why I'm picking 9 years is according to the National Association of Realtors, they said in 2015, people who sold their home lived there on average 9 years. So we're going to pick 9 years.
Okay.
It would be shocking to know for most people the benefit of owning that home versus renting, when you take into consideration cash flow, appreciation, tax deductible, everything, it's about $250,000. That's a staggering number and could be life-changing and creates a tremendous amount of wealth. A $250,000 decision that somebody is making today for 9 years down the road, as we know, 9 years goes pretty darn quick, they can be choosing a mistake of $250,000 if they're scared into renting instead of purchasing today.
And on the other
side, that's just on average 4% appreciation below what we're anticipating.
On the other side of that equation, somebody's rent isn't going to be fixed. So their payment, their percentage of income that it takes to rent that house can be very different because that other person's wages will accelerate and his payment will stay fixed. And I guess
you are hitting on that exactly correctly. In fact, it used to be in 2010, 21% of your monthly income was typically what it would be for rent. Today, 27% of your monthly income is what it needs to be to cover your rent because that rent is going up due to the pressure of so many people renting and fewer homeowners. You're 100% right.
So you mentioned we have this home ownership rate that's a little under 64%. So if you're a policymaker, what's your opinion? Well, job well done or, we've overdone it?
I think that what had happened was, and this is one of the other reasons why there's no housing bubble, is that it seemed to be the mantra that, hey, we need, you know, higher the home ownership rate, the better. But it got overcooked, and you know, there's a lot of reasons why. You know, credit rating agencies, Wall Street greed, nowhere to put your money. You know, a lot of different reasons as to what had gone haywire in the housing market. There's certainly enough blame to go around. But when you take a look at those high home ownership rates, the guidelines were just too loose on mortgages. Let's put it in perspective. And this is really another reason why there is not a housing bubble today, because when we compare it to the other housing bubble, look at the loose credit guidelines that were there. A lot of buyers or home purchasers who should not have been home purchasers were able to purchase homes and multiple homes. If you saw the movie The Big Short, I mean, there you have this kind of go-go dancer, and she had five homes plus a condo, you know, all no income, cash business, you know, not great credit. You could get a loan with a zero down, not verifying your income, not verifying your assets, and a 580 FICO score. I mean, heck, that doesn't exist anywhere near today. So the quality of loans being done today is so much better. But not only are they performing better, but it's really keeping people that perhaps should not have been able to purchase a home out of the market. And you don't want to shut people out who should be buying a home. Well, let's face it, some folks just aren't financially able to purchase a home, and they shouldn't be put in that position that could cause them some trouble down the road. And that's been stopped. So you don't have these kind of make-believe purchasers in the market. And that's why there's really no housing bubble worries today.
Well, we had the pendulum swing way too on the easy side. Do you have an opinion that we swung way too far on the difficult side? Or are we about where we should be?
I think it's probably a little bit more difficult to obtain a mortgage today than perhaps it needs to be. I think that some of the guidelines could be relaxed. But then, you know, where's their bridge too far? You know, it's a very difficult thing to gauge and measure. And the magic elixir that makes everything great is appreciation. Because let's face it, the biggest problem that the housing market had was when appreciation stopped, then everything was exposed and no one had the incentive to make those payments. You see, even if people weren't qualified, if you have appreciation, they were able to get out from under the home by selling that home in a hot market or finding a way to make the payments to protect their equity that was in the home. Once their equity disappeared, there was no incentive to make the payments, and it was just like, here's the keys, and that's when the whole thing spiraled out of control. So, like I said, if the magic elixir of appreciation is there, it masks a lot of these issues that would occur. So you don't want to get too complacent, but I think it might be slightly more difficult than it needs to be right now to get a loan. And certainly the regulatory requirements that are placed upon lenders and the compliance costs are driving up the cost greater than they necessarily should be.
Is it possible? I'm an investor. I buy and sell homes. I've done that for a long time. Up until a few years ago, there was hard money at 12% in Fannie and Freddie if you had rentals and you got up to 10 loans and that was the end of that. In the last few years, Wall Street hedge funds have come in, provided a lot of money for programs that banks don't want that I'm sure are performing fairly well for them. So my question is, do you see any chance that sources other than the normal ones, Fannie, Freddie, FHA, do you see that eventually having an impact saying, you know what, we're going to loan to that group. We feel comfortable with that.
It's hard to say. It really is difficult to say. So,
it would be a lot of money. That's one problem. And the interest rates are really low. And that would be the other one is the yield is probably pretty discouraging.
Yeah, it is. But then again, you know, you have this, where else are you going to invest money today? And that's one of the reasons why the stock market is continuously doing well, is because where else are people going to put money? Well, you know, we talked about this. It's not a great time if you're a saver. So if you think about this, not too long ago when you were planning on retiring, there was kind of a formula for you. You say, okay, look, I can pretty much assure myself a very safe rate of return of, let's say, 5% and be conservative. So for simple numbers, and not that it's an easy task, but in your lifetime, if you were able to save $1 million somehow, you know, real estate value, this and that, and you saved $1 million, well, you can convert that to very safely a retirement income of 5% return, $50,000 a year. And maybe, just maybe, that might be enough with other things to get you through. But today you can't do that, can't you? Because what rate of return can you get? Maybe 0.5%, maybe it's 1%. So, you know, you can't really live, if you saved $1 million, you can't really live on $10,000 a year, $5,000 a year. So what do? You have to save $5 million. Well, that's not, $1 million is hard to save. How are you going to save $5 million to kind of do that? And if that were the case, you're almost forced to go into riskier investments and riskier assets. And people are getting into the stock market and what may very well happen, and especially right now. We've got the S&P, seven continuous quarters of declining earnings. Multiples are high. The stock market could potentially be in for a rather sharp correction, or we're definitely going to get into a bear market sometime. What are those people going to do with those retirement funds that they've got? So it could cause some risk. Now, here's the other thing. You said to me, what's the state of the housing market, real estate market, the participants in the mortgage market and real estate. If that happens, and I think it will, eventually, best place to hide is in the mortgage industry. Best place to hide is in the real estate industry because those assets will remain very, very strong. You know, we've got all this craziness now with the presidential campaigns, and look, it's almost like a cartoon with what we see. And you know, here we are, a country of 320 million people. This is the best we could produce for presidential candidates. You know,
yeah,
so
that's the top four.
The thing of it is well, maybe it's because who would want this job? Because it's very possible that within the next presidential cycle, you're more than likely going to see a recession and very well a stock market, bear market come into play. So you know, that'll probably happen within the next presidential cycle. And you know, who would want this job? But if that were to occur, best place to be for those two things, mortgage industry, real estate industry. Those are the best places to hide.
What's interesting to me, and we'll talk a little bit about the bigger picture where, you know, we see fines, you know, Goldman Sachs, $5 billion, Wells Fargo, 1.2, something like 8 years after the event occurred that caused those fines. So be that as it may, how do these fines affect the future attitude of how real estate will be financed? What creativity won't occur because of these things?
You're 100% right. It certainly limits creativity. It limits incentive. Jamie Dimon over at JPMorgan Chase has been very vocal about the fact that he wants to do less transactions. And you know, here's the thing: is that FHA will come out and say, "Hey, come on, we'll do it down to a 580 FICO." But lenders are self-imposing overlays on it to bring it up to a 640 FICO because no one will do it to the guidelines that the lenders will accept because you take on too much liability risk and litigation costs. It is a marketplace that is crazy, you know, and then the administration says, oh, lenders don't want to lend. Well, lenders do want to lend if you just stop suing them, you know, if you just stop making them out to be the bad guy. I mean, heck, listen to a Bernie Sanders speech for 3 minutes, and you wonder why there's not a lot of lenders wanting to do loans. They're made out to be the bad guys, and they're really not. I mean, if you were to blame someone, they watch The Big Short. Look at the credit rating agency.
Yeah, it's interesting.
They are, you know, they blessed all this stuff because of the incestuous relationship as A-plus when they should have been C-paid.
You know, you bring up an important point because lender overlays really are addressing, okay, I'm afraid. I could make this loan, but I have to say no. FHA's business under, I'm sorry, maybe a 619 used to represent 45% of their business. Now it's 5%. So maybe that was too high of a percentage, but 5% is probably not enough and not reasonable. So I'm hoping someday we find some middle ground. And
I agree with you. It's just the litigious society that we are in, and the moral hazards that have been created are going to make that difficult.
I think FHA could solve that problem with one program change. When I first became aware of real estate, there was something called a simple assumption. FHA had a loan. I wanted to own the house. I got a grant deed, and I sent them a notice and said, I own the house. Here's $45. Put the loan in my name. The only criteria was you had to have it current when that transfer occurred. You could create a loan program that would be more aggressive, and that would be the only criteria change, is that loan could move to another buyer who will make the current payment.
You know, assumability is still something that FHA and VA do offer. So the assumability does exist.
Yeah, but this with qualifying, this was without. Correct. And all it had to do was you made the current payment current. We're in the last minute of this segment. I wanted to just address one other thing that came up recently, principal reduction. What's the reaction of the industry to that?
I think principal reduction is something that people should look at as a vehicle, because if you're going to try to save money and your mortgage rate is, let's call it 4%, it's really a guaranteed rate of savings that you'll have at 4% by reducing principal or paying your mortgage off sooner. You know, it kind of ties up the money a little bit. It isn't as liquid as if you were to put it in the bank. Well, what are you going to get in the bank? Even in a CD, you get less than 1%. Principal reduction for many people has been a very smart way to juice up the interest rate they get on the dollars that they're putting away. So it's a smart move for many, but it becomes more liquid.
Barry, we've been speaking with Barry Habib, and we are going to pick up this conversation on our next segment. Barry, what's your website?
MBFHighway.com. MBF like mortgage-backed security. MBFHighway.com.
Okay. And we'll continue soon. Thank you, Barry.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.